Hello and welcome to the Propel Podcast. I'm your host, Tim East, and I'm thrilled to be here with you. I'm the Propel and International Workstream Lead, and I've spent years working at the intersection of healthcare and technology, and I'm passionate about how innovation is transforming healthcare and the way we live. This podcast is all about diving into the latest breakthroughs in health tech, hearing from the visionary leaders, shaping the industry, and exploring how cutting-edge solutions are improving patient care, wellness, and access to healthcare. Whether you're a healthcare professional, a tech enthusiast, or someone simply curious about the future of health, this podcast is for you. Each episode will bring you insightful conversations with experts, share inspiring stories of innovation, and highlight the trends that are making waves in health tech. In today's episode, I'm joined by George Kowalski, the Vice President of Business Development at MyCare, a scale-up health tech company who are the first age tech company that focuses on extending the health span for older adults at home with conversational AI. By supporting the elderly, care agencies with caregivers who provide home visits and care communities with the responsibilities for the well-being of older adults. George, thanks for joining us today and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Tim. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me on the podcast. Thank you.
That's great. So just to start off, and I know you've had an extensive journey in terms of working in health tech. So can you give us an idea of your journey into health tech and who you've worked for?
Yeah, of course. No problem at all. So the organization itself was started by a gentleman called Kelvin Smugan, who basically developed it for the assistance of one of his parents. Unfortunately, the day we released the system, the parent died. And as such, it became the goal of the organization to help as many old adults as possible to not go through the same problems, not go through the same specific issues that the parent had. And as such, what we're now doing is it's our actual belief that, you know, we want to have saturation across the UK where we would go along and help everyone who possibly needs our assistance to remain independent at home, to have the ability to stay at home rather than to go into the hospital, and also, of course, to stay safe, which is the main priority.
That sounds like that's the background to why it was put in place and what you've been working on, really.
I worked with the National Health Service for 33 years, starting from a directorate manager for orthopaedics, trauma and general surgery, going through to nursing, and then being an EPR products manager for 24 years, which was a bit crazy. The future is digital health, whether we like it or not. And for that reason, I actually went through and joined, first of all, an organization which reviews health and care apps called Orca. I was with them for 4.5 years. And then basically seeing what was available on the market, because there's so many different applications which, you know, people can go along and procure. I came across MyCare and thought, yep, this is the one for me. It was really good because it does what it's supposed to do. And that's the big issue here. The solution really, really works.
Yeah, and it was an interesting time. So you mentioned Orca, they sort of became a guiding light of assessing technology. You know, like you say, you got a lot of experience working from the clinical side, but also the implementation side. So yeah, it sounds a really interesting journey. So you've taken the mantle of working for, I wouldn't call it a startup as such. You're sort of moving forward with a lot of things. So you're sort of a scale-up, really?
Yeah, we've been going for approximately 7.5 years. And the first 3 years, we took Innovate UK grants funding, which actually was a baptism of fire because we actually created the best possible AI we possibly could, having been evaluated independently by the AHSNs, as they were at the time, and obviously universities, to ensure that what we were doing within our projects actually gave the evidence that we were achieving the benefits that we actually were set out to achieve. And that obviously gave us then the ability to take the funding that we were offered. But by doing that, it's ensured that the artificial intelligence that this organization uses in what we call Monica, that's our voice-activated digital health coach, became the best it could possibly be. If I actually have Monica live in my own home, rightly or wrongly, I speak to her all the time. She greets me in the morning. She tells me the news. She tells me a joke in the afternoon to keep me happy. She goes through and says, do I want to do meditation? If she can tell that my response levels have changed and I'm actually tired, it's phenomenal. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it sounds a real clear user case of using AI for, you know, supporting patients. Is the product aimed at the elderly care home residents? And can you give us an idea of what it actually does?
It's a solution in itself because it does so much. It does sensing. So you have sensors for rooms. We have sensors for appliances like the kettle, the actual television. We have sensors for front and back doors. Plus, of course, because we can do that, we also incorporate them into things like our fridges, our microwaves, cupboards that potentially should or should not be opened. Again, we have medical devices, which we also incorporate into this entire solution, which is then overseen by our artificial intelligence. And that is this voice-activated digital health coach, Monica, which then within 7 days learns the end user's routine. She looks at the routine of how you sleep, how you drink, how you eat, how you go to the bathroom, how you transition from one room to the other, from the couch to the actual kitchen. And within 14 days, she then does anomaly detection. So she can see whether you've not eaten in the last 2 days, whether you're sleeping badly, whether, for example, the response levels to her when she asks you questions or when you respond to the system is slurring, or whether delirium's involved, or whether, for example, there are problems related to things like urinary tract infections, you know, dehydration and so on. So the solution itself is phenomenal. It's all about gathering as many biomarkers and data points as possible. And we've gathered 1.79 billion data points over the time that we've been using the system. And then not only doing that, but then presenting them onto the dashboard of either the carer or the nurse or the member of the family to show exactly what's happening to that particular person at home, in their care home potentially, or in an environment where they're being looked after. Because wherever they may be, the solution will work around that person in that environment to keep them as safe and as independent as possible, as I mentioned before.
We're creatures of habits, aren't we, humans? So does the technology look for those differences? Is the patient not following their routine? Is it that type of intervention?
It's quite startling, the fact that the actual pointers that Monica puts onto the dashboard on a daily basis, I'll mention my name as the user here, but things along the lines of, George, I've noticed, has been going to the bathroom more than usual over the last 2 days. George has been going to bed earlier than usual. He has also not eaten over the last two occasions. These are the things that she picks up on and she puts onto the dashboard for either the member of the family to be aware of, or for the carer to actually speak to the end user and say, George, what's going on? Are you not feeling very well? But not only that, Monica also asks the end user. She'll ask me, oh, I've noticed that you didn't sleep very well last night, George. Can you tell me a little bit more about it? I've noticed that you've got lots of light pollution in your room overnight, George. It might be worthwhile you getting some curtains or closing the curtains more. These are the things that are real benefits to not only the end user, but also to those who are assisting the end user with the care. And that's where, if you look at where our integrated care boards are working with us, we've actually reduced carer visits to people at home, because in the time that we've had, for example, the carer attend during the day, that's now replaced by Monica talking to the end user and being their onboard companion, for example.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a big impact then. So can you give us an idea of where it's being used, where you've got some deployments and some of the work around that?
Of course, yeah. We've had the system in alive for approximately 2 years in Bedfordshire, Luton and Milton Keynes, ICB. And obviously that started at Luton Council, which obviously is the ICB linked with the council working together, because social care and health needs to be a joint action. It can't be siloed any longer. They need to work together. So we've worked with that particular ICB. We've also worked, for example, with Leicestershire and Rutland ICB for discharge to assess, where the system will see whether or not the user is capable of being alone at home or whether they should be in a care environment. We've also worked with a series of different local authorities, councils all over the UK. We've had about 21 of those. Everybody from Redbridge, which is our last installation. We've also looked at other organisations such as Wiltshire, Herefordshire. And with regards to those, we've had great successes. We've also worked with dementia villages down in Dover, for example. We've worked with care homes. We're working with Uplands, for example, still at this moment in time. So we work with lots of different organisations, all the way from the integrated care boards, through hospitals, NHS trusts, through GP surgeries, through care homes, through local authorities. And it's working extraordinarily well in all those environments for different specific reasons, whether it's sleep deprivation assessments, whether it's mobility assessments, or whether, for example, it's along the lines of assisted daily living, just to see if someone's actually okay once they've had surgery, for example. And it's a very, very, very positive solution because the feedback we receive is very positive from our end users.
Mm. Has the forming of the integrated care systems and integrated care boards helped with that?
No, not at all.
No, that's interesting. Because you'd think the purpose of that was that joined up working across a geographical location and, you know, care and health working together. So yeah, what makes you say that then, George?
Oh, it was much easier when the CCGs were around, because we found that when the CCGs were in existence, they were responsible for their own hospital or their own GP surgeries, but they also had their own budget, their own fund, and they knew exactly what they could spend that funding on over the 12-month period. Unfortunately, and I say this unfortunately, because it is quite difficult, and the ICBs don't always have access to funding. And if they do, they are extremely overspent, which I think is the case everywhere, to be honest. When we go to some of the NHS trusts and we speak to them and demonstrate the solution and they love it and say, yes, we really need this, go and speak to our ICB. The ICB then says, well, we've got no funds, we've got no money. And also it's very difficult with the ICB finding the right person to speak to. So in the CCGs, we had, you know, digital transformation leads and so on. In the ICBs, some of those roles aren't actually present. They're still vacant. So it is a difficult journey. And I think at this moment in time, I think some changes do need to be made. I don't think it's working as well as it possibly could be.
Yeah, that's interesting perspective on that. You know, it needs to move forward with those challenges. You've identified the challenge of obviously the change in landscape and roles and what have you. Have you got any sort of lessons learned or nuggets of gold for entrepreneurs that may be in a similar position?
Yeah, absolutely, Tim. I think it's imperative that any grants which are available to assist the organisation is taken up. The Innovate UK grant was great for us. It gave us a real kickstart to becoming the organisation we are today. I would also say, because there is lack of funding at this moment in time within councils, within ICBs or within care homes as well, it's difficult to break into that market. So I know of organisations which have come over from Norway, for example, who have struggled and have gone back because they just couldn't break into the NHS. So for those startup organisations, I would say, yes, look for additional styles or types of funding methods. Look to the Innovate UK grant funding. Look to, for example, some of the actual funding that's available for Better Care, for example. You know, those are the areas that not only an organisation can benefit from, but also the organization can talk to some of their potential customers and say to them, look, there is this grant available, there is this funding available, and this could basically pay for you to adopt our solution. It is very valid, and it's a good way forward for any startup organization.
Yeah, good insight that. And it demonstrates where there's value, like MyCare brings value, then you are getting that investment through grant funding. So that's good to see that. You've got success in a number of areas. What's your strategy moving forward to expand that and maybe into new areas of the NHS?
Yeah, great question, Tim. I mean, we constantly are demonstrating the product. And when organizations see our product, they are quite surprised at how good it is. The reason being is because they usually say something along the lines of, we never knew you existed and we didn't know this functionality was available. And that's something which I think has to change for us. And from there, I think, to be quite honest, it's one of those where we need to look at how we can get our name and our brand into the NHS or into those organizations to say, we are here, this is what we do, and this is how we can help you more. So that's a really good start. In addition to that, it's also imperative that now that we've got the benefit realization that we are seeing within our organizations, that we expand on that. We have word of mouth said, we have other organizations who speak to each other to say, yes, we want this as well, because we didn't realize that there's a solution out there which can combat, you know, sleep deprivation. It's something which people don't really have a solution for, but we have an awesome solution with regards to telling someone how well they slept or how badly they're sleeping. But not only that, the fact that during the night they get up at these stages and they basically don't always end up sleeping in their bed. They could sleep on this on a couch with a television on in the background at 3:30 in the morning. So from our perspective, we are expanding along all those areas because we do what other organizations do, but we do so much more as well. So virtual wards, discharge to assess, reablements, rehabilitation, false prevention, we do all that through the moniker system, through the voice activation. We also do mental health. We also do, for example, those areas connected to loneliness, suicide prevention, and so on. And based on all that functionality, we're now looking at other organizations in different countries. So, for example, I had a meeting this morning with Australia. They're looking into adopting the solution for all their elderly users who are from the age of 45 onwards, which is quite a young age, really. Additionally, we've already broken into America. We're partnering with a number of organizations there. We're partnering with the American Association of Retired People, the Mayo Clinic, for example. We had a meeting last week with the American Heart Association. These are organizations which carry lots of clout. And basically, they're turning around and saying, your solution is phenomenal. Again, they're saying, we didn't know it existed, which we have to improve. But basically, they're turning around and saying, wow, this could really make a massive change, a big impact to those users who need this solution.
And it's difficult, isn't it? Because you're doing the doing. You know, you've got multiple hats. You're moving forward with the technology and the adoption and everything. So, yeah, it's interesting that you've already got an eye on the international markets and having that strategy. So, yeah, that sounds really exciting.
And it is, Timmy. I mean, from my perspective, you know, the UK is where we're based, where we started, where we originated. And the UK is our bread and butter. Basically, we want that saturation across the UK for everyone to have the ability to be, you know, safe and independent at home. But because of the way funding is going and because of the way that funding has been lacking in the UK over the last couple of years, you know, we have had to expand abroad. America, for us, actually has been quite easy because of privatization of companies. You know, private companies will turn around to us and say, oh, we'll offer your solution as a bonus or as a benefit to one of our members. You know, they become a member of our organization, we'll give them a kit free of charge. So that's worked very well. But of course, from my perspective, there are so many people within the UK who basically need this solution. If I was a billionaire, you know, I'd let everyone have a MyCare wellbeing kit free of charge on their 50th birthday, because it would really benefit those people to ensure that if anything does go wrong at home, that they're not admitted to hospital, that they have that care assistance, that they have that hand of assurance on their shoulder. You know, that's what would be great, because it's that good. It's that good.
Mm, yeah, it sounds a great offering for supporting residents, citizens, patients, but also the NHS. And it seems to hit quite a few of the big ticket items, you know, support outside hospitals, remote care, preventative care as well, especially if, you know, they're getting visibility of things that are happening before it gets to a crisis point and an intervention.
Absolutely, Tim. And preventative care is imperative because if we can prevent falls from occurring, if we can prevent urinary tract infections and respiratory tract infections from occurring, then that will inevitably make the person more comfortable in their environment because they're feeling better. And that's really, really important. There is one other person, of course, that benefits from a solution, and that is the family member of the end user. We've had our system used for discharge to assess, where over 12 weeks, someone was assessed using our kits to make sure that they are okay to be left alone at home. And when it comes to giving the kits back because they are discharged, the granddaughter, the son, turns around to us and says, no, you can't take it away. You know, we can see that my dad's woken up this morning, that he's had breakfast this morning, that he's been to the loo two times, that basically he's alive. Because before your solution, we had no idea. We had to phone to make sure he was okay, that kind of thing. So it's not just the assistance, the help of the end user, but it's also the family structure as well, making sure that mental health is given to them as well.
Yeah, I totally see that, especially from, you know, having an elderly relative, not having that visibility of what's going on. A lot of times, you know, it gets to the point where things happen and then you're having to deal with that. So any preventative or proactive area of that will really help. Okay, so your solution is, in a sense, remote monitoring, it's got intelligence. So thinking about industry trends, so we're starting to see the emergence of this technology, the practical use of AI. So what are your thoughts on industry trends moving forward? You know, is this going to set the groundwork for mass monitoring for patients?
That's exactly right, Tim. 6 years ago, I was still an EPR product manager. I was looking at electronic patient records, electronic health records, which were all what's called thick client solutions with big servers and so on and so on. And I looked at that point in time, the future, and the future back then, 6 years ago, in my opinion, was digital. It was all about the digital paradigm. So I looked at obviously going into another organization, which actually happened to assess all these applications, as I mentioned, which was Orca. And then from there, I looked at what was good and what was bad. And there was so much bad. There were so many applications that were being just springing out of everywhere that just were not fit for purpose. Unfortunately, I couldn't do anything about it at the time, but you know, NHS trusts and local authorities were piloting these terrible solutions for big money. And then they were switching them off because it just didn't work. So that's what our aim was there. But then because obviously my background's in health assistance, in care and so on, I wanted to get onto the coalface where I would now speak to the end user, offer them a solution that really works so that I know that I've made a difference to their health. I know that I've basically made that difference. And that difference, whether we like it or not, will be digital health. It will be digital health. The EPRs are moving in that direction. You know, they're now real time rather than, you know, entering administrative information. So that's happening too. And of course, on the actual, at the point of contact, at the point of doing things now, we're all on our phones. You know, 76-year-old people now who are retired, they're one of the biggest users of Android and iOS applications. So when you look at, for example, you know, something in the background just simply and quietly monitoring you all the time, which is what our solution does, then you've got these nice nudges from your AI to say, hey, you know, would you like to have a drink with me? Would you like to have, for example, some water? Would you like to have some dinner now? And then from there, some solutions, some information where the actual system itself can say, I've noticed that you're quite tired and basically you're a bit uneasy or uneven on your feet at this moment in time through your gait analysis that I have done. Would you like to have something to eat as it's tea time? And even with reminders where, for example, I've got a reminder at 4:30 in the afternoon for a dental appointment or a GP appointment, Monica will say, oh, George, it's time for your appointment in 45 minutes. As it's raining outside, maybe it's worth taking a coat or an umbrella with you. These are the things that friends would do, that family would do. But when they're inevitably not available all the time, it's having that solution available to you. And AI is that solution, whether it's a voice-activated digital health coach, robotics, or whatever the case may be in the future.
It sounds exciting thinking about how this technology can be used for the right reasons. So I think that's something to look forward to. If anyone wants to reach out for you, have you got any specific asks?
As I say, once organisations realise and see firsthand by either a Teams demonstration or a demonstration on site face-to-face, when they see it for themselves, and I've had two local authorities invite me onto site to try to break the system, and they loved it. They thought it was brilliant. When the organisations see how good it is, they suddenly realise that, oh, we've got all these problem areas, all these pain points that we're currently trying to deal with. This will be able to deal with those pain points and give us really good, for example, outcomes and benefits from them. Put on top of that, with the return on investment that they would also get by making savings in specific areas, you've got a fantastic solution. All I would ask is for whether it's an ICB, whether it's an NHS trust, whether it's a GP surgery or a PCN, whether, for example, it's a local authority or a care home, if you have any issues at this moment in time where the application of a solution could be adopted to help people who are over 50 years of age, then please do give me a call and let me prove to you what I'm saying is true, because it really is.
That's great. And we'll put your contact details on the podcast, the text that goes with it. So, George, that's been really good, really insightful. It's been really good to hear about MyCare, where you've come from, where you're going, and the value it brings to citizens and patients. So thanks for your time on this podcast, George.
Thank you very much, Tim. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks very much.
For further information on the Propel Accelerator programmes and how we support health tech startup and scale-ups, go over to our website, www.propel-yh.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or X.